Hey, Ciarán, thanks a million for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get into everything, I have a lot of listeners who are not from a GAA background, particularly the basketball community in Ireland. Would you mind giving a quick 30-second intro into who you are and what you do?
Yeah, 30 seconds is long enough. Look, I suppose, my name is Ciarán Byrne. I am 28 years old. I am from County Louth. So a previous Australian rules footballer. So spent 6 years down in Melbourne playing professional sport, which is quite cool. I'm currently at home now, living in Louth, and I'm playing football with County Louth and my club St Mochtus. So that's a full-time job in itself. And I also run a small wee business out the back of my house in Body Rock, a former Pilates. So yeah, that's my life in 30 seconds, I suppose.
Very good. You came up in the Allianz ad recently. I was watching it. I didn't realise your dad played for Louth. That obviously he was a massive influence for you growing up.
Yeah, massive influence. So quite lucky in my family that we're all very close. My dad played with Louth back in the day and actually captained Louth to a Leinster final back in 1970 or so. He'll probably kill me for not knowing the exact date. So yeah, my brother played with Louth as well recently, and also my two sisters as well. So a quite big GAA family. All four of us played with Louth at one stage, and we all played with our clubs in Mochtus too. So you can imagine the conversation around the dinner table every night is always about football. So luck, it consumes a lot of our life. And my dad's actually the chairman of the local club as well at the minute too. So yeah, it's football mad in our house.
Very good. You were scouted to go to Australia when you were pretty young. Talk us through that experience. I know it's kind of maybe changed now slightly, but what was your experience of being scouted and the initial thought of going from Australia when you're busy discussing Gaelic football at the dinner table at home?
Yeah, it seems a long time ago now at this stage. So I was 16 when I was first, I suppose, approached by the Aussie Rules Scouts. And yeah, being that young, look, you probably didn't know too much about AFL, but it's become a lot more prevalent now across Ireland and I suppose across the world that it's become more common for people to go out and pursue that career. But yeah, I was casually playing football with St Mochtus and with Louth at minor level. So started playing with Louth at, I suppose, at the age of 16, so I was quite young, and got a phone call from Australia to say that they wanted me to go to a trial down in Limerick. So that was quite young, so 16, 17, going to a trial in Limerick with the likes of Kieran Kilkenny, Jack McCaffrey, Paul Mannion, all them types of players were at the trial, and I suppose I was lucky enough out of them lads to be picked up and to go out and I suppose see what life was like out in Australia. And went out for a couple of weeks and really enjoyed my time there and was offered a two year stint to, I suppose, pursue a career out there. And I suppose it all kind of went from there. And to be offered, I suppose, the opportunity to go play a professional sport at such a young age is something that you're not going to turn down. And I suppose it's a sport that we didn't really know much about, so you're really going into the unknown, and leaving, I suppose, at a young age to the other side of the world was always going to be a daunting experience. But look, I lasted 6 years, and albeit some great times, had some tough times too down under.
When you think back to that trial and being offered, is there a particular thing that stand out to you of why they offered you that contract? Is there a particular skill set they looked for in you that you said, right, that's the reason why? Did they ever discuss that with you? What was their rationale for bringing over a person to play a new sport that you had never even heard of before that?
Yeah, look, it's probably not specifically that trial. They probably spent a good 5 or 6 months actually going to all my games and seeing what way I moved. And I think they're quite interested in on how the Irish move as footballers. Like over there, they might be a wee bit more robotic, but because we're quite mobile, and our agility and speed and power is quite good in the Gaelic game, and that's so important to be able to transition into their sport, is that your evasive, I suppose, capabilities and how you play the game is it transitions quite easily across there. So look, I suppose I was the perfect size, 6'2", and could move. So they want the mixture of being able to defend kind of taller footballers and to have that ability to be able to, I suppose, break away from tackles and whatnot. So a mixture of both speed, power and endurance, I suppose, what they look for. So look, I suppose that kind of helped me in a way. My athletic ability kind of did transfer straight into the AFL, but if I didn't suffer the injuries that I did suffer, I suppose I don't think I'd be in Ireland at this stage. I probably would have lasted a lot longer right there, but that's the way it panned out, and I suppose I have no regrets.
When you go over there and you're settling in, I watch a lot of NBA and they talk about the rookie duties. Is that a thing in Australia as well?
Oh yeah, you're an international rookie, and you've been into a room full of Australian footballers, and you're trying to steal, I suppose, a position on their list first and foremost, and then try and push your way into the team. So you are a foreigner, and you really have to earn the respect not only of your teammates, but I suppose all the coaching gang as well. So yeah, you're a rookie. You have to you're the last number on the pile. I think I was number, geez, I was number 48 on the panel when I first went. I was only a young kid and white skinned and quite skinny, and trying to, I suppose, force my way into a team full of a lot of egos, and it was quite tough initially, but it took me a year to break into the senior team and started to really make a name for myself after a couple of years, and then sustained some serious injuries and kind of found it quite hard, I suppose, to sustain that high level of interest, and I missed home as well, so decided to pack it all in.
I was listening to something you did before, and you were, I think you were discussing some of the preseason stuff you did. It sounded grueling, and I think you said the preseason lasted longer than the actual season itself. Talk us through some of the stuff they did with you. I don't know if it's still the same now, if they changed their methods, but the preseason stuff sounded awful.
Yeah, crazy. See, it is quite a large pitch, so you have to be quite fit, and it's a 360-degree game, so you can get tackled from all different angles. So you had to be quite strong and to be able to cop all them tackles. So that did mean that preseason was going to be torture. So preseason probably started around October, November, and it went up until February probably. So the guts of 5 or 6 months of torturous training. And when I initially went over, so I actually met the team in America. So each year you would go on a pre-season camp, and that would be 2 weeks of just strenuous training. So I met the team in America, and one thing I'll always remember is the session. One of my first sessions was the Grand Canyon. I'm sure everyone knows what the Grand Canyon is, and we spent the whole day. So we walked down the Grand Canyon, which was relatively not too bad, and took us, I think we got up at 6 o'clock in the morning. It might have took us 6 or 7 hours to get to the bottom, but you always think that once you get to the bottom that you're just going to walk straight back up, but we actually had to run back up the mountain. So we would have ran for 5 minutes, walk for 5 minutes, ran for 5 minutes, and I'm not too sure. I'm sure there's not too many on here listening that they would have done the Grand Canyon before, but that was the hardest thing I've ever done. You think you're at the top, but you were nowhere near it. And I just remember literally falling, because I was still young and I was trying to prove, as my first couple of weeks, I was just trying to prove that I was strong and mentally strong. And I remember getting to the top, and I couldn't walk. I think I had sore knees for 2 weeks after that. I fell at the top, and they just tried to mentally challenge you and trying to break you. But yeah, got through that quite good. And I remember getting home for Christmas after that camp saying, "Jesus, ma'am, I don't know if I can actually do this. It was that hard." But lucky enough, I stuck at it for 6 years, and yeah, enjoyed it.
When we're talking about the GAA and some of the structures we implement, I had a great chat with some of the AFLW players about bringing over their learnings to Ireland. Is there anything in particular? Obviously, it's different because that you have full time access when you're in Australia. But is there anything in particular, maybe off the pitch, that the GAA can look for? I know the GPA do a lot of stuff in terms of player development and helping people with yourself, like with your business. But is there anything you've noticed over there, like the wellbeing officers, that we can implement here to have success in the GAA within the amateur setup?
Yeah, look, the biggest thing is that it is amateur and professional. That there's nothing that can really compare. But I think, as you said, I think you're lucky enough when you're in a professional environment that you have everything at your disposal every day, be it physios, doctors, podiatrists, psychologists, and they are with you every step of the way. And it's up to you to be proactive and, I suppose, engage in whatever conversations that you need to engage in. But for that to be involved in GAA, like, it costs money. I know all the high level teams within the GAA hemisphere all have a lot of them people at their disposal at the minute, and that's the level where our GAA is probably going to. It is becoming quite professional, and psychologists are needed. It's a much a mental game as it is a physical game at the minute, and the way the game's going, but all that costs money. And we all would love to have podiatrists and doctors and psychologists at our disposal within the GAA, but that's just the nature of, I suppose, the beast. It is an amateur sport, and There's no doubt in years to come that that's where GAA is going. Every team is going to need not only a manager, but they're going to need all these extra, I suppose, backroom staff at their disposal if they want to achieve the fullest in their career. So yeah, Gaelic's becoming very professional, and there's no doubt that that's the way it's heading.
Do you see a scope for it becoming maybe semi-professional over the next 10 years that players are paid and compensated for their time? You see a lot of players, changing their careers and might go down different routes to facilitate football. Should that be looked at in terms of making it semi-professional and alleviating some of the financial issues that players come across or time management?
Yeah, this has been a question that's been going on for years within the GAA, and look, I don't think it should go professional. Look, there is a massive commitment that goes into county football. Like, I'm lucky enough that I run my small business, and I'm flexible with my time, and I have time to go and do that extra training session and look after my body. But boys are starting to change their jobs, and seeing how that fits into their county career. And I suppose that's the way it has gone. Like, it's a full-time job, 7 days a week. You really gotta love it to I suppose stick at it, and if you want to be your best. So I don't think it will go semi-professional. I don't think you can, because then transfers and people leaving counties and all that, I suppose that probably has to come into play when it goes to that professional level. But the community aspect and the I suppose the love for GAA is something that I did miss while I was in Australia, and I'm delighted to be back into the fold now. I've been involved with the lads, back with my local team, and it's been tough not to, I suppose, play over the last couple of years with some injuries that I've had. So, but it's something that I sorely missed while I was down under.
I remember reading a thing you talked about your retirement from AFL and saying you fell out of love with the game. Obviously, your injuries and setbacks had a massive part to play there, as you would have been still there if you hadn't had those injuries. Is that community feel, that kind of being, down in St. Mochta's with all your mates that you grew up with, is that what drew you back? Is it part of the, have you ever lost love out of football, in terms of Gaelic football? Was that the difference maybe between, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but losing love out of Aussie rules rather than Gaelic football, or have you suffered that with Gaelic football as well?
No, I don't think I've ever suffered that with Gaelic football. As you can see, I'm quite passionate about Gaelic, and I am obsessed with it. And it has become, or it always was, a part of my life ever since I was quite young. And Gaelic football does become, I suppose, football in life becomes your identity, and you absolutely love it. So I think with the AFL, because it was my job and I was getting paid for it, and Carlton was not my team growing up as a kid, and it was a completely different sport. So you don't have that, I suppose, connection with the AFL, but obviously you do have that with the GAA and my club St Mochta's, and playing football out loud and putting on them jerseys means so much more than actually, I suppose, playing with Carlton. I suppose that was just a job at the end of the day. But look, football is your identity, and I think over the last year, when football has been taken away from me, it has been extremely mentally tough. Like, the last couple of months has been hard for me to take, and I suppose it's only people really close to me that really know what I've been through. GAA does mean a lot to me, and when that's taken away from you, a massive part of your life is kind of gone, and it's hard to replace that. I suppose I need to use different avenues, and be it football, or I know we spoke earlier that maybe getting into coaching, but I really just can't wait to get myself back out there and to be given that chance to, I suppose, play football again and show people what I can do.
What keeps you going on the tough days? Because I know we spoke before we recorded, and I remember I sent you that video that somebody sent me, and they didn't realise I was going through a particularly tough time with my injury. What's keeping you going on the days that things just aren't going well, and you're in the throes of the recovery now, but even when you get closer to playing, there will be those days. What will keep you going now and in the future?
Yeah, it's a mixture of a lot of things. I suppose when your love for football and your love for the community and playing with your local club and putting on that loud jersey and seeing how good Louth have went this year, and my club St Mochta's are on the crest of a wave as well at the minute too. So, just that feeling of putting that jersey back on again with my club or with Louth is, I know how good that feels, and I know the next time I put that back on that I will definitely not take it for granted. And I say that to everyone I meet at the minute. You cannot take each training session or each match for granted, because for me, that's been taken away from me on three different occasions, be it in Australia when I did my ACL, and ever since I've been home, I've had two quite serious injuries. So dislocated my ankle when I first come home, and now I've done my ACL. So that's three serious injuries where football has been taken away from me, and I will never, ever, ever take it for granted again. And that feeling of putting that jersey back on again and back out playing with your mates, that's something that I hold on to every day, and it drives me on each rehab session. So literally when I get off this phone call or off this podcast, I'll be going straight to the gym to put my head down again and think about them moments of getting myself back out there.
When you initially get the diagnosis of your ACL and you said you've been through, this is your third major injury. I remember talking to Liam McLaughlin about this. She did her ACL three times. Is your initial reaction, oh God, I have to do this again? Or is it, okay, I've done it before. Maybe it wasn't exactly the same, but I can get through it again. What was your initial reaction to that?
So I done mine against Clare, and that was the first round of the league, and I was probably feeling the best I've ever felt. I was ready for a big year. I was like, this is my year to, I suppose, announce myself on the GAA scene ever since I've been home. And straight away I done it in the first 6 minutes of the league, and I knew straight away. The doctor came out and goes to me, what's wrong with you? And I said, I'm just after doing my ACL, like I'm in serious pain, and give me that green whistle. I'm sure everyone knows about that green whistle and how that can numb the pain. But look, that initial week where you're waiting to get the confirmation that it has been your ACL, that initial week you're in a real dark place. You're spending a lot of time on your own, and I suppose with your girlfriend, your family, and you're just icing the knee and prepping yourself for an operation. It is a dark, lonely place to be. You snap out of that quick enough. And there's no doubt over the last couple of months I fell back into that place mentally, especially now when games are being played with the club. And while I was watching Loud and knowing that I can have a massive impact on the team, you do fall into them dark mental places. But I've grown to be quite resilient, albeit have some emotional times, no doubt. I've grown to not love rehab, but know what to do next, and my mindset clearly switched back on to what can I do now. I can only control the controllables, and that's my rehab. And I think I chatted to Chris Kerr from Antrim. He's done his ACL a couple of times, and what he said to me, give me some good advice, saying that rehab needs to become your sport. And yes, you don't have the games to look forward on the weekend and that adrenaline rush, but rehab becomes your game of football then, and then you just solely focus on that and do everything you can to get back out there.
That's interesting. I heard that recently, where the player did their ACL, and they said the advice I got was treat your rehab as championship. That's your, that's your game. You know, when you're going to the gym, you go in with the right mindset, because it is. It's a. I've never done my ACL. I've had a major injury, but when you're going to the gym, it's you have to go in, and it's relentless, and it's exhausting, and it's mentally, I think, more challenging than physically. Obviously, you're physically exerting yourself, but when you're in the throes of the injury, I suppose I can feel your drive and your attitude towards it. Were you always this driven? Was it something you developed with the three injuries, or were you always like that even at a younger age?
I think if you talk to my parents, I think they'll always say that I've been self-motivated. I think I always wanted to be the best, that no matter what I did, I always wanted to be it in school, trying to achieve the best results. I always wanted to be the best footballer in the classroom. I always wanted to be the best player on the team. And I think that when you're the best, you've high standards of yourself, and that comes with hard training, and I suppose being self-disciplined as well. So that's always been a part of me. And look, there's no doubt I enjoy my life too. Like I have my beers, I eat my chocolate bars. I do all that as well. Like there has to be a happy balance. But look, yeah, for a long time, ever since I was young, I always was self-motivated, and I love training because I know how good it is, not only for physically and how it's going to help me in the Gaelic field, but it's so good for my mental health as well. And I never regret a training session. Anytime I'm feeling low, I'll always go to the gym and exert some energy. So there's benefits that way too.
Have you stayed involved in terms of club? I know County has wrapped up doing your own individual work, or have you kind of maybe stepped away a bit? How have you managed doing your own rehab within the team setting? Have you engaged with that at all?
Yeah, no, I pretty much stayed heavily involved. Yeah, so did my ACL quite early in the league, and then stayed away for maybe one or two training sessions. Then once I got moving a wee bit again, I tried to go to nearly every meeting, every training session, just to stay involved. Because when you don't go, like, that's a massive part of your life missing. So you nearly spend every day with the lads, and you're up in Darver at the Centre of Excellence here in Louth, and you're up there most nights of the week. So you don't know any different. So it's nice to go up and, I suppose, stay involved with the lads, and obviously get physio where I can, and do my rehab. Because rehab can be quite a lonely place, and you do spend a lot of time doing rehab sessions on your own. But anytime you have an opportunity to, I suppose, lift weights with the lads and bounce off them, and eat food after training, it was important for me to do that just for my mental state, and to stay involved.
How did you find going back to watch games? I know I particularly struggled with it for a long time. I didn't go to any of my club games for guts of a year. I've never really said that before, but I really struggled with it personally, and I even found it hard really up to this year to be playing. You know, I just really struggled with it. How did you find obviously watching games during the league and seeing Louth in the championship? Did you find it difficult to be there, even though you want to be there for your teammates, but you're really just struggling maybe inside?
Hated it. Absolutely hated it. Look, it is tough watching on, and the lead up to games, and the chat around. Even when you're walking the streets, people are saying, "Are you looking forward to the weekend?" And look, it's bittersweet, like, because all you do as a kid, all you want to do is play football. And when, especially Louth, the way it's been going this year for them, we've had some quite big games, and a really good league, and then lead into a Leinster final for the first time in 10 years. And for me to be kind of sitting back watching all this happen in front of me, like, it is tough. You're trying to be as upbeat as you can around the lads, and to try and push them on that wee bit more. But all you want to do is put on the boots and go out there and I suppose act on your words, and help the team get over the line. But look, I suppose, look, that's part of football. You're gonna get these setbacks, and that's what drives me on. The hope that I can help the team next year, I suppose, go that one step further.
If there's any younger players listening that play Gaelic football, what would be an underrated skill in the game at the moment? Is there anything you think that we're maybe overlooking, you know, in terms of our development of players?
I suppose, I think everyone's talking about him at the minute, and they have been over the last couple of years. You see the way David Clifford plays the game. He's an absolute freak of nature. The way he plays, it nearly looks like he's a basketball player. The way he kind of solos the ball, and how evasive he is, and how much room he makes for himself without even moving. I think over the last couple of years, I suppose, because the game's gone quite professional, and that gym work and strength and conditioning has become quite a massive part of the game, I think players can spend nearly too much time on that side of things, and less time actually out doing what's most important: kicking the ball over the bar, practicing that dummy solo, practicing that evasive hop, or anything to get away from your opponent. So I think for any young kid growing up, yes, strength and conditioning is quite important, but never forget that you have to go out and be able to play football at the end of the day. So being able to kick off both feet and do them trickery things that David Clifford can do.
Did you see that picture of him from the weekend where the foot is over his head when he's kicking the ball? I actually felt a twinge in my hamstring looking at that. In terms of, you've mentioned a couple of times, obviously physical preparation, but mental preparation. Is there anything that you would do, particularly when you're playing, in terms of mentally preparing yourself for a game? Is it the side of sport that you've looked at a lot or discussed with anyone like a sports psychologist? How do you prepare mentally for training or for a game?
Yeah, look, that's becoming a massive part of the game. And as we spoke before, I think psychologists are starting to become a lot more prevalent within the GAA, and a lot of teams are looking into that side of the game. Because if you're not mentally ready for combat, then physically it doesn't matter how good you are, you're not going to be in the right state to, I suppose, push them extra couple of yards. So, but it's probably not a side of the game that I looked into massively over the years. I think because I am self-motivated, I like to think that I can motivate myself to get up for games. But yeah, it is becoming a massive part of how you perform on the weekends, and teams and players are starting to, I suppose, look into that a lot more.
How do you find running your own business? You know, obviously you've mentioned that it does free up your time a little bit, but obviously it does have its own stresses and pressures. How do you find trying to balance both, you know, playing football at a high level? Because club now is, you would say, with some clubs is a high level. How do you find balancing both in terms of your time, you know, staying focused on sport, but also, you know, giving up your time for running your business and paying your bills?
Yeah, no, it's I'm quite lucky. The business that I'm running and it is going really well. I'm so lucky to have so many amazing clients that are quite understanding of my position. My timetable during the week is always organized around my training schedule with football. So I also have a girl working for me as well who takes some group classes too, which is great to have her on board, Lisa. So no, work is going really well, but as I said, it marries quite well with my football. I couldn't imagine getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and having to travel to Dublin and doing a lot of strenuous work. But I'm quite lucky to be able to help people, I suppose, train both physically and help them in a mental state as well and show them how good fitness is for themselves and having that flexible lifestyle to, I suppose, run a business and being able to train myself is vitally important if you want to probably succeed at the top level, and especially this year too. With the injury at the minute, my ACL, it's as you know yourself, it's it really is a full-time job. Literally, I would be doing rehab the guts of 5 or 6 days a week. Rehab sessions early days would be quite monotonous, quite boring. So, but my job as well with Reforma Pilates is that allows me to do a lot of exercise in there as well with the clients and doing stuff with them too. So, look, I'm quite fortunate and long may it continue.
Reformer Pilates, is that something you came across in Australia? I don't get a sense that it's massive in Ireland just yet.
No, definitely not allowed anyway. We're definitely a long, long way behind what was going on in Australia. So yeah, Reforma Pilates was something that we did as part of our training regime down under. So 2013 was the first time I came across it. And then when I done my ACL in 2015, it was in Australia. That's where I really fell in love with Reforma Pilates because it was the base of my rehab and it was the only, I suppose, exercise that I could exert myself doing while I was in a bad way with my knee. So fell in love with it out there, started looking into it big time and realized when every time I came back home that Reformer, yes, Pilates was relatively big in terms of mat Pilates in Ireland, but Reformer Pilates was probably only in the big cities like Dublin and Belfast. And so yeah, decided to I suppose branch out and set up my own. And I'm lucky enough that, as I said before, have some great clients and it's people are really loving it. The benefits are great. It's so good for your overall strength and mobility, and it gives you, I suppose, that escape away from the hectic lifestyle that we all live at the minute. So, yeah, I'm quite fortunate.
For those who are listening and don't know what that is, I know a little bit about Reformer Pilates. Is that mainly based on the equipment you have? Do you have this, you have your own single kind of piece of equipment? Can you explain a bit about that to us?
Yeah, it's literally a machine, and a lot of people when they first come in, they literally think it's a torture machine, but at the end of the day, it's quite relaxing. So the machine itself is a string attached moving machine, and there's ropes as well, which allows to put you through a quite a strenuous exercise while working on your overall flexibility and coordination and strength. So it's a mixture of Pilates and weights, and you can get a quite a tough workout on it as well. So people are really enjoying the benefit at the minute. So I have four machines, started off with two originally. So yeah, it's starting to grow nicely, and who knows, hopefully in the next couple of years I can branch out and maybe open one up in my local town, Dundalk. But while I'm busy with work, my sole focus is to try and get my knee right and get back and do what I love most, and that's play football with my club and loud.
I remember I was listening to a great Saturday panel with yourself, Cian Hanley, and there was another player there. His name escapes me, but you were all three of you were talking about the transition home and how difficult it was. I think Cian was home a year and he was still struggling. In terms of the employment, when you came home, you worked for sports apparel brand. What was that like going back into, you know, the kind of different routine of having a job, being employed, you know, having employment as well as football, and then coping with that? How difficult was that?
Impossible. Well, I wouldn't say it, but yeah, what no, it was really tough because for the previous 6 years, I was so lucky that football was my full-time job. I'd wake up in the morning and the only thing I had to worry about was football. And when I had to come home and actually work a full-time job, wake up in the morning, be it starting at 8 o'clock, finishing at five, an 8 to 5 job, and then having to actually come home, get food into me, and then go to training sessions. It was so hard to kind of understand how much of a commitment actually Gaelic football is, and you really begin to respect the amount of work we actually have to do to I suppose play the sport we love. So that balance was kind of tough, and even the whole transition of coming back into Ireland and getting back into the fold of living the lifestyle that we live here, and not being I suppose stuck on beaches or cafes, and really enjoying that sort of lifestyle in Australia. That was quite tough. It probably took me the guts of 2.5, 3 years to really find my feet. Now amongst that, like I had some injuries too, which was quite tough. Like when I first came home, all I wanted to do was play Gaelic football. Like yes, I had to work, and that's part of life to I suppose help me transition back into Ireland. But I couldn't play Gaelic football because I dislocated my ankle in literally one of my first games back. So you can imagine that was another that I suppose dark time in my career. But look, I love home. I still live at home with my mom and dad. I'm 28 now, looking to I suppose move out. I probably should sooner rather than later. But we have a close family, close community in my local village. So I count myself very lucky to have all them people by my side.
There was a bit of talk last year, I think, about you potentially going back to AFL. What was, obviously you stayed. I think Loud was a big factor in that. Obviously, Mickey Hart and Gavin Devlin being there, but and your family, obviously. But what was the draw to go back? What was the thinking to stay? Talk us through. That must have been a difficult position, decision, and then to be injured so early in the year, that obviously didn't help things. When that opportunity could have happened.
Yeah, no, that was a mad enough time. So Conor McKenna, he went back, and I suppose when he went back initially, I was I suppose thinking about it. I was in my head, I was like, Jesus, what if I could potentially go back over? And because I felt like I nearly had some unfinished business within the AFL. My career was going really well out there before I got injured. Like I was starting to really make a name for myself, and there was a bit in me to say, Jesus, why couldn't I be that player that's actually who he was and play the most games being an Irish player? But look, that opportunity was there. Carlton got in touch with me. I actually met with my good mate Patrick Cripps in Spain. Met him in Barcelona, and yeah, conversations led, and Carlton were pretty keen. They're supposed to take me back over, and when I sat down with Mickey and Gavin and I suppose my family and really thought through the decision, and I wanted to stay at home and I suppose create a legacy for myself within Loud and GAA. And I know that's been put on hold this year, but I'm gonna work extremely hard next year to get back into the swing of things and do that. But yeah, GAA ended up meaning a lot more to me than I suppose going out and going back and to play AFL. So yeah, it just came down to that really.
When you mentioned legacy there, I like asking this question to players, and I'm not retiring anytime soon, but eventually when sport does come to an end, when people say your name or when they think of you, what type of player or athlete do you want to be remembered for?
Look, I think over the last couple of years, I think people always speak about Ciarán Bonner, the potential that he has and whatnot, but he has suffered some serious injuries. Like I want to, I suppose, fulfill that potential and really show people that I can play GAA at a high level, and that I have the ability to be to leave the Loud jersey in a better place, and I suppose be one of them Loud players that are remembered for a long time. And it kind of hurts me to think that I haven't really been given that opportunity yet. And I think a lot of people might think that I have been around for a long time. Like I'm 28 now, but I have not played much GAA football at all. Like I probably played more AFL games and then I've actually played GAA. So look, I want to, I suppose, leave the GAA knowing that I've given it my all and that I've left the red jersey and be at my club jersey in a better place, and that I have fulfilled that potential that I see people probably seeing me.
Very good. We're going to fly through the sideline seven. It's the same seven questions at the end of every episode. I haven't sent you these, so these are going to be complete raw reaction. Kieran, what's your first question is, what is your favourite quote?
What is my favourite quote? Jeez, you really put me on the spot. I don't really know if I have one, to be honest.
You're not a big quotes man, though.
No, well, Lisa works for me in the studio, and she's always putting quotes up on the board, but she's always the one that does it. So, look, I like reading quotes, but I can't say I actually have a favourite quote, so I'm going to have to pass on that question.
That's fair enough, fair enough. Question two, what's the best sporting event you've been to? And you can pick one as a fan and one as potentially a player you were involved in.
Best sporting event. Look, the greatest dream for any loud footballer, I suppose any footballer, is to play in an All-Ireland final. So I can't surpass an All-Ireland final. So I've been to a fair few of them across my career. All-Ireland finals. And then on the flip side of that, I was at an AFL Grand Final as well. And that was just an amazing thing to experience. And to think that I could have potentially played in one of them would have been quite cool. So yeah, the AFL final was quite amazing as well.
Very good. Question three, I think I know the answer to this one. What's been the biggest setback or challenge so far in your career, and how did you react to it?
There's been a lot of setbacks, quite some quite serious injuries. So how did I react to it? Probably answered that question already. Just for the love of getting back playing and showing people what I can do, that drives me on. So yeah,
very good.
Answered that a lot.
Yeah. On the flip side then, a bit more positive, what's been your biggest achievement so far on or off the pitch?
On the pitch, I think looking back, when I was 17 and I represented my club in St. Martha's playing with Ireland. So played with Ireland in international rules. That was quite an amazing achievement for myself and my family and my club. So really enjoyed that. And then playing and representing, I suppose, Loud, my club in Australia as well, was something special and that I'll always remember.
Very good. Looking back, Kieran, what advice would you give your 18-year-old self?
Not get injured.
That's a good one. Good one. I might take that as well. Question six, who would be your dream dinner guest and why?
Who would be my dream dinner guest? These questions really are putting me on the spot. Who would be my dream dinner guest? Yeah, no, I'm obsessed with golf at the minute, so I wouldn't mind having Shane Lowry. Shane Lowry seems a good crack, so I'd love to sit down with Shane and I suppose maybe have a few pints of Guinness with him. Be good.
Very good. This question might throw you. I should have given you a heads up. It is a tough one. If your life was a book, what chapter would this be called?
The beginning.
Love it. I'll let you go to the gym. Kieran, thanks a million for joining me on the podcast and wishing you the best of luck with your recovery and beyond.
Thank you so much, Arlen. It means a lot.